Hi, I'm Peter Tiani, CEO and founder of Group Health North and CBIG, welcoming you to Benefits Genius podcast number 19.
Hey, it's Howard Kettner, and here I am in Toronto. That means I get to sit down in person with Dave Patriarch. In this episode, we talk about expanding the practical use of the Plan Administrator Checklist and about the top 20 new things a broker needs to know. We also talk about caring, but not so much that you inadvertently harm your client. We also tackle the important issue of educating your client rather than taking orders, emphasizing the critical nature of processes and checklists. Stay tuned. The next 45 minutes or so is going to just fly by. Well, Dave, here we are. We're sitting here between two education events that have involved some of our time and energy over the past bit.
Yeah, it's been busy, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And so what was mine about last week? It was the five P's of preferred positioning, and you've got an event coming up tomorrow.
We do, with the top 20 new things that brokers need to know to try and kind of keep them out of trouble and add more value to their clients.
Well, there's just no end of new things. And, you know, at the event last week, I mean, what did we allot it? 2.5 hours to go through the plan administrator checklist.
And I thought I'd do it in half an hour because everybody's heard it. And then I thought we'll go through more of the use and, you know, how to implement it and using it as a prospecting tool and stuff. And all of a sudden the whole thing changes and everybody wants to go into more depth on every single line item. It was great. It was fantastic. The plans of mice and men, you know.
Totally. I think we concluded along with the rest of the room that we could have actually spent 2 days.
Yeah, easily. And in saying that, I find it impossible to believe. And at the same time, just the depth of the questions and people running through scenarios and everything, not just during the day, but afterwards in the mixer and everything else as well. Just it kept on going for hours and hours afterwards. So pretty cool.
Well, it was really neat to see the realization that it's not just for clients.
Yeah. A lot of people came up and afterwards, one of the guys had been there a bunch of times and he said, like, I never thought about it as a prospecting tool. And I'm like, well, why not? Because that just makes sense when you go out and talk to somebody new. He goes, no, like once a case is in place and once we have it, then we use it, but not before. So it was nice to see people kind of go, no, these are all great tools before, during, and after. So, and the seminar I'm doing tomorrow, the top 20 new things, we're actually making a checklist on that to help when you go into prospects to help them understand what the risk is of changing companies and stuff like that as well. Sometimes just a broker change is all you need.
For sure. And you know, what's so interesting is that on the plan administrator checklist, what caught me as the light bulb started to go on in the room about folks saying, I can use this for prospecting, is it's proof positive that this isn't a business to business, this business of group insurance. How many more businesses can I put in that
line? Person to person, man. You're right. You say it all the time and it's true. And even when it is business to business in certain things, it's still the person that's interpreting all that information. So, you know, I went through a bunch of stuff with a prospective client the other day talking about areas of risk and liability. And so the comment was like, how do you put this on your spreadsheet, this huge unfunded liability? So that's kind of a business to business spreadsheet, boring conversation, but it's a human behind it. And he identifies a risk and says, okay, let's fix it. Like it's all people, all the good stuff anyway.
Well, for sure. And I like what you said there, even when it's a business to business transaction, it's people interpreting it. And so Lori McNeil, part of Benefits Genius since day number one, of course, mentor of mine going back decades, the godfather. Yeah. He did a little piece there on the four pillars. So listen, simplify, be vulnerable, teach. And I loved what you had to say, though, later on about listen, because as one of my board members used to say, he used to say, Howard, you know, don't assume anything. Just when you need it, the English language will let you down because it's so widely open to interpretation.
Oh, totally. And I mean, I jumped kind of negatively. The comment was, listen to what your client's saying. And I took that to mean the negative listen, which was be an order taker and do what they tell you to do, which was not your intent at all in the statement.
But it happens a lot in the business, for sure.
Totally, yeah. And I'm like, no, don't be an order taker. Sometimes you got to do the right thing for the right reason. And I use the example of the drowning man of you don't just jump in and help them swim. You smack them over the head with a paddle. And when they're unconscious, you drag them in the boat because otherwise they're going to pull you down. And I don't want that bad situation. Like being an order taker and just taking direction from the clients means your client may be going down and he's taking you with you. And that's not what you want to have happen. So
I just love that analogy, though. Like I had never, ever thought of it that way. Like is there a lifeguard somewhere in you?
No, but I used to do search and rescue.
Did
so,
you?
Yeah, I did when I was a kid. So we used to have to go out after people that decided that swimming across Lake Ontario was a good idea. And we did body recovery and stuff like that.
Wow.
Police and fire department and stuff. So I got this sailor thing going back many years before the big stuff. So,
But is that actually what happens? That if somebody's drowning, the logic kind of leaves?
If somebody's drowning and they get to the fear point where it becomes automatic response and somebody gets near them, they will climb on top of the person to get out of the water and drown you. And more people are drowned saving people from drowning than like anything. It's like, it's really crazy. So they teach you right away, don't reach out. Reach out with a pole. Reach out with a towel. Reach out with a flutter board if you're in a pool somewhere. And that's part of life-saving of don't put yourself at risk. You've got to be there. You've got to be whole to help the other person. If you're in the water and they're pulling you down, you're not whole anymore. And that's like a lot of things in life. You've got to be safe and secure to be able to help those around you, whether it's a family and you're a parent and taking care of your kids or whatever, and life-saving. It's the same kind of thing, and it's the same with us. The tie-in is with our clients. We have to be safe and secure to be able to help them. If we're at risk, we put them at risk, and they put their employees at risk and so on. So we want to avoid that.
Well, I've got a whole lot better analogy now to use going forward. I won't give you any of the credit, but I always just thought I was so great with that thing about the put the oxygen mask on first in the airplane.
That's great. Yeah,
but I like yours.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah. Put it on you first, the child second. Because otherwise you might not be around to help the kid get off the airplane later. So,
but that really is powerful because it's so easy to want to take the orders in a client situation. And I mean, that's where the plan administrator checklist, with apologies to those that have been through Dave's plan administrator checklist before, but that's where the client says, no, our non-mandatory plan is absolutely fine. Just carry on. And so many folks just go, okay.
Yeah. The line I've been using a lot lately and I've been sharing with brokers is when a client or prospective client says that, I just go, thanks very much, but I don't want to be the guy that has to testify against you. And I just let it sit. And the person will look at me kind of funny and go, why would you ever testify against me? I go, if something happens with that non-mandatory plan, and one of those employees that regrets not being on the plan is disabled, and they sue, they're going to say to you, I'm suing you and the insurance company because no one's covering my disability. And they're going to ask me to be a witness to say, did you explain what mandatory was? Did you explain participation limits? Did you identify what the risks were of not enrolling an employee if something happened? And my answer is going to be 100% yes, I did, because I do my job really, really well. Not only that, I'm going to prove it because I've got the list that says all these things and stuff. So I'm going to make sure that my client is taken care of. So I'm also going to be the guy that hurts you. So I don't want to ever have to testify against you saying, I told you how to do it right and you ignored me. It's easier just for me not to do business with you. And I will say to every broker out there that when you walk away from a client, when you stand up, shake their hand and say, thanks very much, I'm sorry we can't do business, and walk out, you can bet that they're going, why is this guy leaving over such a minor point? Because it's not a minor point. And they realize when you walk out, walk away from a sale, or better yet, if it's an existing client, walk away from an existing client, they understand very quickly how important this stuff is.
Well, I mean, the epiphany for me around the plan administrator checklist probably starts at 50 or 100,000 feet at the very concept of having a checklist, because in the Benefits Genius program, I mean, ad nauseum, we talk about it's not yesterday's client, it's not yesterday's product, it's not yesterday's whatever. And I mean, when I came into the business, I can tell you there was very little by way of checklists for anything, but the product was so simple. And you know what? In my first 15 years in the business, I probably not only didn't have a plan that was not mandatory, but nobody asked to make it anything other than mandatory.
Yeah.
And now there's just a huge proliferation. And I don't know if it was you and I were talking the other day, but it was just talking about professionals. Like an airline pilot
has a checklist. A doctor has a checklist. In the emergency room, there's a checklist. Even, and using our industry, even with third-party administrators and some of the insurers, when you have an application or enrollment form, there'll be a checklist cover sheet that goes with it saying, do you have the application? Do you have the check? Do you have all the enrollment forms? Do you, like, I mean, so that is a checklist. So the sale has a checklist, but nothing else does. And to me, that's just kind of crazy because I can't remember it all. And I was working on getting my private pilot's license, so I'm used to the checklist. When we scuba dive, before you go under, you go through a checklist of stuff. You know, like everything that you do. When we go sailing, we go through a checklist. It's mental now, but we still go through it every single time just to make sure that, you know, you're not heading offshore and, you know, looking back to find that your power cord is still plugged into the shore and you just tore it out. You know,
totally.
But yeah, you do that. And our business has not been really very good on that. And that's one thing you've made me better at is I've got a whole bunch of lists that I have in my head, and now I'm turning them into tools, and we're putting more of them on the CGIB members' own website. So this top 20 is now a checklist, and the plan administrator is kind of a checklist, and there's all these other ones that we're just slowly kind of taking what's in my head and other people's contributions and cranking them out into tools that people can use more.
Well, and I just think that we can't talk about the importance of a checklist enough. So, I mean, is there anything you haven't done, Dave? Like, I didn't know that you had actually got your pilot's license.
I got 7 hours of solo time.
Nice.
And then I ended up having a kid, buying a house. And at the time, it was $155 an hour. And I just went, okay, this is ridiculous. This has got to go. So I've soloed and flown around by myself, and I never finished it. So it's on my list of one of these days when I have a bit of time. But I'm a control freak, if you haven't figured it out by now. So I kind of go, if I'm on an airplane, I want to be able to land the airplane. So now, can I fly a 747? No. But I could probably get it down on the ground more or less in 20 or 30 pieces. And so everything. So, I mean, every vehicle you can think of, except for a submarine, I've probably driven, ridden, whatever you can think of. So flying, I haven't parachuted. That's on the list. But, yeah.
Jack
of all trades, master of none.
Well, you virtually kind of told the story of son number four, Jordan, whom you've met. Mm-hmm. Private pilot's license at age 16 and got his class one driver's license, got his first aid ticket, but for the same reasons that you just iterated, he wants to be able to. And so here he is at 16 years old. And all I've been doing is, I'd gone out and watched him land a couple of times, and he says, okay, now I'm licensed. I'll take you up, Dad. And thanks for your support, et cetera. And the thought crosses my mind, you're putting yourself in significant danger here, going up flying with your son. And all of those thoughts disappeared as he walked me around the plane and went through the entire checklist. I mean, this was the kid that couldn't remember to take the garbage out or to tidy up his room once a week, you know. Yeah,
but he's not missing anything on that checklist because you know.
Nothing. Yeah. And then pulls over and he's taking it through I don't even know what it's called, the engine warm-up. You run it up and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Check all the instrumentation, check all of everything, like all the controls. So I'll just tell you a funny flying story. My wife came out to watch me when I was soloing. And in the little airport that I flew out of, you were not allowed to do touch and goes. So you had to stop, land, taxi around, and take off again.
Okay.
And it was just one of the rules for the airport. So I came in for my second or third landing, and I came in really hard, really fast, and I bounced so hard, I knew I wasn't going to be able to stop. So I did a touch and go and just took off and radioed my intention, and it was the safest thing to do, and off I went and around. And I was kind of so shook up that by the second time I came around, I did the same thing again. So the third time I was fine, and I kind of got it all back together and did everything the right way.
Which was good because you were running out of fuel by now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I get out, and so my wife's waiting for me, and she goes, you know, this is the first time I've kind of been afraid for you while you've been flying. And I said, why? She said, well, you did this thing where you came down and the guy said it's called a touch and go where you took off. And she said, and I turned to the group of people beside me who are all pilots waiting to get up. And she said, oh, that's my husband out there. All these other people have to stop and take off again. But he just, you know, stops and just takes right off. And he's like much better. And one of the guys leans over and he goes, ma'am, it's all about perspective. Your husband totally screwed up that landing. He's totally out of control. And he's just taking off again to try and protect the whole thing. And he goes, I think that's great that you're fully supportive of him. He's supposed to be landing like everybody else. So just the different perspective on the same scenario. So afterwards she goes, how much should I have worried? I'm like, nah, don't worry. I would have stopped, if it was unsafe.
But, well, now the analogy is just getting deeper and deeper and more profound, because how many advisors do a touch and go? And
yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. There's lots of crash landings. I know that.
But, back to the point, to the analogy, like as professionals, to be going in to see a client or leaving without the checklist, and instead the only check being the one that comes at the end of lunch for the clubhouse sandwich. Okay. And, really taking folks through, because from my perspective as Jordan's passenger, or in this analogy, a client, I got so much comfort out of knowing that there was nothing left chance.
It's instant trust.
Totally.
You know that this person is doing the same thing that their instructor taught them, and they're doing the same thing over and over again, looking for the same things, and it just builds trust immediately. And hey, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. And so what it really does is we've had the discussion, offline a number of times about educate the hell out of everyone.
Yeah, teach everybody everything. Like, it's funny, in your seminar, and this comes up all the time, people go, well, you don't just give away this list to your prospective clients. I'm like, sure. And they go, well, then they can just take it back to their broker. Yep, and their broker probably doesn't know half the stuff on the list. That's okay. That'll just identify the difference. But I want the client or prospective client to be there and in good shape when they become a client down the road. So let's educate everybody. And the ones that value education will choose us. Like, I mean, time and time again. And it doesn't take long. I mean, sometimes it's one or two items on a list, and they just all of a sudden go, this is a different conversation. This is not about price. This is not about plan design. This isn't about product. This is about protecting me and protecting my employees. And at our seminar, one of your other speakers, Paul Wheeler, came up and said, you know what? He goes, like, his job was protecting their employers, which is protecting their employees, which is protecting the social service people in their care.
Right.
And what I said when I spoke resonated with him, because it was about protecting people. And so educate the hell out of people, take care of them, protect them.
Well, and Paul really got that, because he's the big proponent of, and we're going to have him spend a couple of hours at the next event going through his important four and important two. And cool. So the whole important four being that area of risk protection, like we're assuming that the plan is going to be secure, it's going to be what it needs to be. And one of the reasons that Paul, who has no background in employee benefits, but goes out and visits with employers that are participating in the trust that he's part of, Paul goes through his whole thing from a social services sector perspective, where he talks about when a new client, somebody requiring care because they're physically or mentally handicapped, comes to them, they cover off all the important four stuff. So are they going to be in a secure environment where they're never going to be harmed again? Do they have food? Do they have shelter? Do they have clothing? So those are the important four things that Paul talks about. And then you don't go to important two, do we want Rice Krispies or Fruit Loops for breakfast, until the important four is covered off. And so often as advisors, we jump straight into, like, would you like your vision care to be 200 or 250, which is an important two item?
Yeah.
It doesn't speak to the fundamentals. And the reason that Paul reemphasizes this, in his previous life, he was actually part of a large association plan where, unbeknownst to virtually any of the participating employers, the plan was of the size that they could legally run the long-term disability on ASO.
Oh, no.
But nobody was watching the investments.
Yeah.
And the participating employers, in addition to paying premiums, were then asked to ante up with a big, fat check.
Yeah.
To keep everything on side.
Self-funded LTD is crazy. It's all, I don't know if they passed it yet, but they were going to make it illegal in Canada. So it all had to be insured, because whether it's Eaton's or a Nortel or like almost General Motors, they were going to leave all these people off on disability in dire straits when companies crashed. So Yeah, it's a wild one.
It's crazy. You
know, there's a line I used to use when I first started in the business. I don't use it anymore, but it's still relevant. Because at the very beginning, I sold a few life insurance policies. And I know, like, I do nothing but group insurance.
Right.
But at the beginning, I was sponsored, and I had to have keep a sponsor happy, so I sold a few. And I remember sitting down with a prospect who was a group client, and he wanted to buy a life insurance policy for himself. And he said, well, I'm a smoker, but quote, non-smoker rates. And I've had a few health problems, but let's just leave that out. And blah, blah, blah. And I go, like, why are you doing this? And he goes, well, I need to buy a life insurance policy for the bank. And so I'm like, well, I don't sell life insurance policies. He goes, no, that's why you're here. I go, no, no, I sell life insurance policies that pay. And he goes, well, yeah, that's what I want. I go, no, no, you want a life, you want a piece of paper to make the bank happy. You actually don't give a crap whether it pays or not. So if they would decline because of your medical history and you're charged too much because you're a smoker and everything else, you're just saying, I don't care. And that's, I can't sell that policy. I don't want to sell a policy. I want to sell a policy that pays. And the same with group insurance. Structure it right so that it pays. Structure it so that when, in the case of Paul's group, when somebody is disabled, if that group collapsed, they know their disability is going to be paying them for the rest of their life, not waiting for the bankrupt not-for-profit or company to somehow find funds to pay people on disability, which doesn't happen. We've seen that too many times. So.
No, it's just crazy. And out of this education process, what I found fascinating is some of the responses that you get from an employer, where an employer will literally say, if I'd known this, I wouldn't have signed up for benefits.
Yeah, so that's the one downside to the list, is it terrifies people. It terrifies brokers, it terrifies clients. And exactly what you just said, you go through the whole list and they're like, I never would have put in a benefit plan if I knew this put you at risk. And the answer is, well, it doesn't put you at risk. The day you hired your first employee, you were at risk.
Right.
Whether it's for workplace safety, whether it's in Ontario where you have workplace violence legislation and stuff now, whether it's, I don't know, like 100 other pieces of Employment Standards Act, all the different things.
Well, some of the things we learned from the legal counsel that you had at one of the last events where it's 104 weeks of...
Oh, yeah. You have to hold a person's job open if they lose a child in a violent incident for up to 2 years. Like, there's a ton of...
Right, and continue risks. The benefits.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I...
But to be educated on that, I mean, there's an enormous safety in it because, like you say, you're at risk as soon as you hire the employee. I mean, if they're with you for 10 years, there's 10-year severance on the table for a start.
And I mean, and just, you know, things you don't think about, like, and like poison workplaces and sexual harassment in the workplace. Like, there's a million things that we just kind of step into when we're employers, kind of going, those are the risks. The benefit plan, you know, highlights some of those risks, maybe. The fact that we highlight the risk and can mitigate it. You can buy plan administrator liability coverage. You can change your plan to avoid some of these risks and everything. And that's the end of conversation of, yeah, there's risks. Like, I mean, there's risk crossing the road. But hey, guess what? You can look both ways. You can have a crossing guard with you. You can cross at the light. There's lots of ways to kind of reduce your risk. And that's what we're there for. So we want to identify the problem, have the person buy into what that problem is, and then say, here's, it's simple to solve this. Like a good broker can solve all those problems very simply. And in almost every case, almost for free.
Well, and Dan Sullivan of Strategic Coach always says, all progress begins by telling the truth. Like, once you've got all the facts laid out, so you have 104 weeks exposure to continuation of benefits if this is going to happen. Did you know that before? No, but but once we know all of these things, now we can take action rather than finding ourselves unwittingly in the witness box.
Yeah, and that's a part... We can all deal with just about anything. Finding out about it at the wrong time is the wrong way to do it. We always manage risk and reward in everything we do. And so when you talk to business people, they go, okay, well, the risk of a desk, you know, burning up is nothing. It's not worth an insurance policy. But that $100,000 tractor outside, that's worth insuring because, you know, that's
right.
Productivity, that's business, that's everything else. So we always make those risk reward, you know, judgments and stuff. And benefits is no different. If you understand what the risk is, you can kind of go, do we insure that or do we not? Is it worth it or is it not? Is it going to pay us or is it not? All those type of things.
You know, I've been hanging around in the business, as the audience knows, for over three decades, and sitting there and really listening. Like, this was the third time now I've been through your plan administrator checklist, and I have to tell you.
You're going to fire me and just do it on your own at some point.
I wouldn't even touch doing it on my own. I absolutely would have sworn that you put new content in from the first time I heard it, because I was hearing it, or I was hearing it a different way. And I was, even on the third hearing, I have to tell you, if I was an advisor, I would still be overwhelmed to the point that I would want to come back for a fourth time.
So thank you for saying that. But I think the interesting part is, sometimes it's me in different stories, and people relate to the different stories different ways. So
for sure,
my experiences, but I've also been lucky enough to have the experiences from all the other brokers that have shared their stories over the years. So I don't always know all the details, but boy, you run into lots of scenarios when people share all their stories, especially the horror stories. So when you have a new group of people and they're throwing stuff at you, as far as questions or what would you do in this situation, or, you know, I've had that happen and this is how it worked out or didn't work out, you end up with a whole different dialogue and the conversations go a whole different way. So if you say something, you know, it was a very simple rule, you know, life insurance is a taxable benefit, and all of a sudden somebody starts asking questions, well, like, let's compare that to the US and let's compare that to, you know, in England, because we have a plan that's got all these different things. Well, all of a sudden people go, whoa, there's a difference. And you start to think about it in a different way than, and it's the most simple thing stated the same way over and over again, but the perspective of it all has changed a little bit. So that, I think, is the feedback from the participants means the seminar is never the same seminar twice. And it is what you make of it. We all are prepared to hear different things at different times.
Oh, for sure. It depends what was front of mind last week, and all of a sudden now I'm really zeroed in on this. But
and what case? You're like, okay, so not maybe in your situation, but brokers will, you know, run for years and years without a disability claim on a small group business. Or
for sure.
And all of a sudden you got one, you go, hold on, everything you're talking about today about LTD is relevant, factual, timely. This is stuff I need to know. A week before, wasn't on the radar. You would have gone out to the washroom at that point. So your different experiences and stuff when you're sitting in that room, and if it's especially great if people will share in the form of questions or share stories, then it totally changes the whole dynamic of what you're presenting. Same story, just sometimes there's pictures, sometimes there's movies, you know.
Absolutely. One of the things that I find so interesting about it is that you emphasize and reemphasize throughout the presentation the importance of not making an assumption about something, like ask that question or submit that non-evidence form.
Yeah, there's a bunch.
Or evidence form, I mean. Medical evidence form.
Yeah.
And don't prejudge somebody's health condition, for example.
Yeah, too many people try and put themselves in the position of the insurance company and decline people coverage before because they think they know better. And it's not always the case. Insurance companies make mistakes. Somebody might get coverage that they shouldn't have, maybe according to the rules. And like, let's let the insurance company make that mistake, not the broker. Like, why put yourself at risk? And I think, you know, we tend to assume and we tend to try and resolve questions quickly rather than properly and rather than fully. And I use the example, I don't know if I've used this in a podcast, but it's still relevant if I have. I had a client for many years, small company, never added any employees, sent me a quick email saying, can I waive the waiting period on a new hire? And the answer is, yes, you can, of course. So you can make it a condition of employment effective day one, except this was unusual for that client. So I called the client and said, what's going on? Who are you hiring? Because they've never hired anybody, small family business. And they said, oh, we got this great person, and we've worked with them for years, and they're going to come work with us, and we're so excited. So I'm like, fantastic, that's great. So why are you waiving the waiting period? And they said, well, this person's really concerned about hospital visits and doctor's bills, and that's a really big concern. So they wanted to make sure benefits got covered day one. And the warning bell started to go off.
Wow.
And that was, why are they worried about hospital bills and doctor's visits? And the person said, oh, no, they're healthy. And I said, no, that's not where it's going. There's more to that than just healthy. I go, is this person American by chance? And they said, yeah, he is. I go, does he have OHIP coverage up here? Because if he doesn't, this group insurance plan is predicated on OHIP paying first and the group coverage second. We need to get him provincial plan replacement coverage for 3 months until he gets his OHIP coverage. and so on and so on and so on. So we ended up having a longer conversation, and the client's like, I'm so glad that we had this conversation. Thank you for calling. Thanks for identifying a problem we didn't even know existed. And now they've bought provincial plan replacement coverage. There are guys on the way to the OHIP office, Ontario Hospital Insurance Plan, to sign up for coverage, which he'll be eligible for after 3 months. Just takes his work permit in and away you go. And now the liability is gone. And that's not the quick answer. It's a good touch point, and it ends up being a warm and fuzzy forever. The client's amazed with me because somehow from a quick, you know, one-line email, we ended up with a 15, 20-minute phone call and huge value added to the relationship.
Absolutely. And on the theme of don't make assumptions, I have a far less meaningful but somewhat humorous story from when I was young and naive. Now I'm old and naive, but yeah, there was a difference. When I was young and naive, my first college client, I'd been working there with the HR director. We'd made a number of changes to the benefits plan over the course of collective agreement bargaining. And she phones me one morning and says, and starts asking questions about extending benefits for a terminated employee, and was asking to bend the rules in a number of areas, and would this be possible? And I did know enough as I responded to kind of couch my responses saying, but you probably wouldn't do that because the plan would suffer harm here. Yeah. It would be very expensive there, and on and on and on. And this conversation went at some length with me couching everything and saying, this is going to be bad for the plan, but it's available if you want it. Well, then to find out a day later that she had just been terminated, and the phone call to me was the last phone call she made of her office at the college. And so it was from a don't assume anything. I'm not sure how useful it was, but I started to respect my inner voice more when if the bells are starting to ring, maybe there's a reason to ring.
Listen. Isn't that rule number one?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I've got one, and this is listening to your client and not hearing what they're saying. And this is the racy section, so you might want to just skip 2 minutes ahead if this bothers you. But I'm meeting with a client, and I've had the client for about 12 years. Her husband had passed away a number of years ago, and she and I are sitting in her office. And she says to me, we've kind of got through the renewal meeting, and we're kind of just touching on a few other topics that we're cleaning up. And she says to me, can I ask you your personal opinion as both insurance person, but just as a guy in general? So I said, sure. She said, okay. So my girlfriend and I were sitting on the beach in Florida. We started talking, and she said, I was thinking about getting implants, and I want to know what you think. And I said, oh. And she said, so I'm kind of curious about, she said, you talked about cost plusing, so maybe I could run this through the plan. And I said, well, cost plus is great, but this would probably be a cosmetic thing. So therefore, you know, the rules were changing and stuff, so it probably wouldn't be eligible. And she said, well, just tell me what you think. Do you think I'd look better with implants? And so you kind of sit back and you
takes advisor to a whole new level.
How do you get here? And I said, well, you know what? I think any medical procedure, you know, isn't really, I mean, they're all unsafe to some degree. And I said, I think you're fine. I think you look great just the way you are. And I wouldn't change a thing. And so now to put this in perspective, this woman is 73 years old.
Wow.
So now we're having this conversation. She goes, I know. She goes, but the doctors have said it's really, really quite safe. And it's very routine now and everything else. And my girlfriend said she thought I might look better having the implants done. And she said, I just thought I'd get another opinion. She goes, you've always been honest with me. And you deal with the insurance and medical stuff. So she goes, do you really? And I got, you know, I said, you know, I really don't think you need to do it. But, you know, whatever. If you're there, we'll make sure that all the appropriate coverage will work where it will and where it can. And she said, okay, because my dentist said, when I get these implants put into my mouth, that what's going to happen is, and I stopped.
Wow.
And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and she's like, you thought I was talking about something else, didn't you? And I go, I actually really did. And she's like, I'm talking about dental implants, right? And I'm like, yes, I know that now. And the 72, 73-year-old looks at me and goes, I'm never going to let you forget this ever. And every renewal since then, and she's so straight, she'll go, so what do you think of my chest anyway? Like, just to throw me off sometimes. But so you assume, and I mean, and everybody kind of gets there, male or female, that you're sitting on the beach talking about implants. It wasn't dental implants. That's not where people go to. So you have to listen hard, and you have to ask questions and not jump to conclusions. So.
And never, ever let ourselves take ourselves too seriously.
No, life is too dead. Short. Yeah. So that was my embarrassing listening without hearing example. So
that's awesome. So you've got a big event tomorrow. I mean, there's going to be, I don't know, 130, 40, 50 people in the room.
Yeah, pretty good size. So actually, it's the last seminar for the summer before the summer comes. And then we've got a couple planned for October, November. And CGIB is going to be going through some evolution and stuff over the fall and stuff. So, yeah, it's going to be a good seminar, I think. I think there's going to be a lot of people walking away with good stuff to share with their clients. And right now, at least in Ontario, there is so much stuff going on with legislative changes. We've got everything from minimum wage increases to the workplace report that just came out, to under 25 kids getting drugs for free, to mat leave going from 12 to 18 months. Like, boy, there's no shortage of stuff to talk to your clients about. So when it comes to educating, getting back to educate everybody as much as you can, there's a huge amount out there. I've got clients that are just started signing up to my blog, which I just started a week or so ago, and they're like, this is fantastic. Once a day, I'm getting information about new legislation and stuff that's in the pipeline. So if I'm working on policies and procedures, I now have an idea. I might have to readdress this 6 months from now. So it's a great time to educate. It's a great time to be educated, too.
It's a great time to be an advisor, because we're sitting here at a time when folks are thinking about compensation disclosure, justifying the work that we do. And it definitely is not yesterday anymore. It's not yesterday's product or climate. And I think that if we really do a job, and I'm just going to rip one of your lines off from the last event.
Sure. I think Lori McNeil took all the lines already. So,
So he
took the list as his list, and he's taken all the lines are his lines. And I have to say, at least, I think I promised I'd say Lori McNeil 14 times during a podcast, just so we'd have the same amount. Yeah. No, go ahead. Rip off the line. Credit to Lori.
But Lori did say that he took your list and presented it to a client and then just claimed it as his own.
As he should. And he would have made it his own. I know that. Hey, your son did a better job of Michael of making the list way better than my list, and that's pretty cool.
So. Well, he just had some fun with it because he has a number of clients that have collective agreements, yes. And so taking the cues really that you had outlined and adapting them. But you were or Lori. Now I'm totally confused to who said what, but said something about, you know, if we're doing our job properly, and then if there's disclosure of compensation.
Yeah. I'm surprised disclosure hasn't happened or switched to fee-for-service already. I just thought we'd get down that road faster. Not that I agree with it necessarily, but I'm not afraid of it. And I started disclosing years ago the formulas and stuff that I use. And clients all said the same thing. You don't get paid enough for what you do. We look at you as a part-time HR consultant, a part-time financial advice giver, accountant, part-time lawyer, part-time everything, and keeping us out of trouble. So you're well worth it. And sometimes it's just giving them the information. So when they do go talk to their employment lawyer or talk to their accountant, they have all the information. So it saves them money on the other end of the relationship. So
it's awesome. So Dave and I are sitting here again doing a podcast like we usually do. We maybe run off of kind of three bullet points. And of course, all the things I'm supposed to tell Dave before we sit down, I never do. And what I was going to tell you, Dave, is we've gotten some feedback from the audience that are saying, you know, quite often they have an hour on the road. And I've been letting podcasts run into an hour 10, 15 by the time I do the preamble and stuff.
So does that mean we're done at 38 minutes? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, and so what some folks said is, look, an ideal time would be kind of 45 minutes with the preamble and all of that stuff. So I just want to toss out to our audience, let me know what you think. And thank you, besides that, for letting me know what you think. You can always shoot me an email at howard@benefitsgenius.ca. The podcasts are in response to the issues that you raise. Sometimes you raise them with Dave, sometimes with me, sometimes with some of the other guests. And secondly, let me know of anyone that you think I should be doing a podcast with. But it's a ton of fun. I just couldn't imagine more fun.
For all the people listening, it's not really painful. It is really easy. And it's amazing. I've had more and more people listening to them commenting on how useful it is. And the biggest problem everybody has is when they look and they see all these podcasts on the page, they go, how do you spend this much time listening to all this content? And it's not hard at all. Like you said, I mean, like it's in the car, it's in the background while you're, you know, working on stuff. And it's pretty cool. I listen to all of them too. So Not my own. My own just sound funny.
They always do it. And to your point, exactly. Don't be scared of doing a podcast. I still can hardly bear to listen to my own podcast. Yeah. And I go, what a goof. Man, do I really come across like that? And that's normal.
Yeah, totally. I think I get Laurie McNeil back, though. He's got to get a couple more out there, I think. He's not doing his full share of pulling the weight of Keeping Benefits Genius, you know, in podcasts. So if you can go back to him.
Exactly. So we should probably run like three in a row with him.
At least.
So a Laurie McNeil 2, a Laurie McNeil 3, a Laurie McNeil 4.
Maybe throw a Paul Wheeler in between just to break it up. Just so it doesn't all go straight to his head.
You know? Yeah. Nobody has more fun than we do. And thanks for hanging out with us again.
Thanks for having me here too.
Hey, terrific day. We'll do it again soon.